And this is A Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott.
And I'm Dennis O'Hare. Many people who are working minimum wage jobs are women, and many of those are women who are African American or Latina. Leaders of several advocacy groups got together earlier this week in Washington, a couple of days ago, to discuss the issue and what they say is the need to raise the minimum wage.
Well, Valerie Wilson is director of the Program on Race, Ethnicity, and the Economy at the Economic Policy Institute. She was on that panel and joins us now from NPR in Washington. Ms. Wilson, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Rose and Dennis.
Let's set the stage here in terms of the importance of raising the minimum wage for women of color.
Okay. Well, we know that over the last 35 years, most workers' wages have stagnated while economy-wide productivity has risen by 64%. Now, what that means in simple terms is that the potential has existed for adequate widespread wage growth over the last 3.5 decades. But unfortunately, these economic gains have not trickled down to the vast majority. And many of today's current minimum wage workers are disproportionately women and disproportionately women of color.
And so for someone listening, they would say, okay, well, what's the ripple effect here, obviously on the community and their families and also on the economy?
Well, the current federal minimum wage of $7.25 is a poverty-level wage. Not to mention the fact that the base pay for tipped workers is set at only $2.13. So roughly half of all minimum wage workers receive some form of public assistance. In addition to reducing federal expenditures on income support programs, which are definitely necessary and important, raising the minimum wage also puts more money in the pockets of workers who are likely to spend it on necessities like food and clothing. And this increased consumption stimulates economic growth, which in turn helps to create more jobs.
Well, certainly that's the argument for higher wages. But the question has always come up, should the minimum wage be raised as a matter of law? And we've talked on this broadcast just recently to folks who cover the economy quite a bit, including the president of the Federal Reserve here in Atlanta, who said, look, there's no guarantee that raising the minimum wage would actually lead to more people working and more people able to spend. It doesn't mean that they wouldn't, but it's not a magic bullet. It's not a guarantee, especially if you do it by law, and especially if you raise it as high as a lot of the advocates want, all the way up to $15 an hour. Do you have any data that would contradict that?
Well, the meeting that we had a week ago on raising the minimum wage was focused specifically on the Raise the Wage Act that's been introduced by Senator Patty Murray and Representative Bobby Scott. And they proposed increasing the minimum wage to $12 an hour by 2020. So there would be time for this increase to go into effect, and it would lift wages for 35 million workers. Again, in thinking about the impact that it has for African-American and Latina women, more than a third of African-American working women would get a raise and more than 40% of Latinas. I think when you have that size impact, you can't deny that there will be some sort of effect on the broader economy as working families, working women have more money to spend, given that our economy is driven largely by consumption.
But most of those people probably work for small businesses, and the argument has been that small businesses would be disproportionately impacted by a minimum wage increase requirement. Is it possible that some of the folks that everyone is trying to help with a minimum wage increase might actually be hurt if those businesses can hire fewer people?
Well, some of the state bills that have already passed make provision for small business owners who may have more of more difficulty in adhering to the higher wage so that they have additional time to make the adjustments. In some cases, there may be exemptions from making the adjustments. But we also know that there are a number of small business owners who favor raising the minimum wage and in some cases even pay more than the minimum wage already.
We're speaking with Valerie Wilson, who is the director of the Program on Race, Ethnicity, and the Economy at the Economic Policy Institute, and she's joining us from Washington. And Ms. Wilson, I want to bring this up because on this panel, was there discussion about also, because some people feel, let's have a bigger discussion about making jobs available that are beyond the minimum wage for not just women of color, but for everyone, so that, and I know that's sort of a bigger discussion, but was there discussion about that? What needs to happen in order to have access to higher paying jobs as opposed to minimum wage jobs?
Well, as I mentioned at the beginning, you know, the whole issue of wage stagnation goes beyond just minimum wage workers. That's not just the problem faced by those who are the lowest earners in the workforce. All wages, nearly all wages, have been stagnant over the last 35 years. So in raising the minimum wage, what that essentially does is also put pressure on the wages of those who earn just above the minimum wage. And that effect sort of, you know, works its way up the wage distribution. So that raising the minimum wage is just one piece of this larger puzzle in terms of raising wages overall. And the Economic Policy Institute has launched a major initiative that we call Raising America's Pay that highlights this broader issue of wage stagnation, identifies the role of labor market policies and practices in suppressing wages over the last 35 years, and recommends policies that would reverse this trend, one of them being raising the minimum wage.
Well, that's interesting. And can you give us some other policy recommendations then besides raising the minimum wage?
Well, something else that is currently in the works, the White House, the Department of Labor, is interested in updating their overtime rules so that people who are considered exempt from overtime pay and who actually should be eligible for overtime pay because of how much that they earn, the additional duties that they perform on their jobs, they would also get a wage, an increase in wages. Many of these people are identified as managers, say, in retail stores, but make very low wages because the overtime rules haven't been updated in so long. So that's another thing that currently is in the work to raise wages, not just for minimum wage workers, but again, for workers who earn above that level.
Interesting you should mention that, because that was the subject of a conversation here a few days ago on this broadcast. But how much of this is structural? Because what we're seeing in the economy is this really slow, but really slow growth that in which employers don't quite feel completely confident yet to go out and hire folks or to raise wages. So what would you say to somebody who says, look, once employers have more confidence, some of the wage stagnation problem will solve itself because they will feel, oh, I can afford to pay these workers more and retain them?
Well, I think we know that at very low levels of unemployment, there's definitely upward pressure on wages. That's because the pool of available workers gets smaller, and so in order for employers to attract and retain workers, they have to offer higher wages. The fact that the Great Recession was so deep and so expansive, and the fact that the recovery has taken a long time to sort of pick up steam, we still are well below full recovery, much less full employment. So I think that definitely has something to do with the fact that wages are still relatively low.
So I was wondering, because as states consider and they grapple with this legislation, and you will hear states say, let us decide on what we think is best, because each state will have a different economic landscape, so to speak. But what is the Institute's sort of strategy then? And we have a 2016 election year is coming up. So what is your all strategy in trying to get this message across to all the states? And do you have sort of people on the ground in every state or in regions of the country trying to push your message out about the minimum wage?
Well, we work closely with civic engagement and community organizing groups across the country to help advance campaigns around pay and job quality issues. We've also recently released a new interactive map called the Minimum Wage Tracker that shows the effective minimum and tipped minimum wage in individual states and localities, along with detailed information on minimum wage laws in those places, including when the most recent increases were made, whether or not they indexed their minimum wage. And so the role that we play is really in providing information and equipping those on the ground to help to advocate for what they know and believe is best in their state.
In Georgia, there's debate periodically in the state legislature about raising the state's minimum wage. And one of the arguments that comes up every time is, look, the state minimum wage really doesn't cover that many workers. I don't know if you know state to state, but is there any idea how many folks who might be covered by the state minimum wage would be the people we've been talking about, women who are African American or Latina?
I do not have a sense of who's covered under state minimum wage or not. I do know that there are a number of states where their state minimum wage is below the federal minimum. And so in raising the federal minimum, that goes a long way in raising the wage in those states that would be less inclined to do so themselves.
And for folks who might think, wait a minute, I just thought there was one minimum wage. Can you give us a quick breakdown of who might be covered by a state minimum wage versus the federal minimum wage, who it applies to?
Well, basically, you tend to get the state minimum wage being the applicable wage when it's higher than the federal minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So in places that have already raised their minimum wage above the federal, the one that would apply would be the state minimum wage. Now, in different states, the laws vary in terms of exemptions, et cetera. And a lot of that information would be available in our minimum wage tracker that I mentioned as well. It's available at www.epi.org.
The last increase in the federal minimum wage was in 2009. If you could look into your crystal ball, Ms. Wilson, what would you like to see that increase to?
Well, there's been a lot of political momentum around raising wages broadly, but also raising the minimum wage. I think we have to keep in perspective what it means when we talk about raising the minimum wage and why that is so important. The fact is that the inflation-adjusted value of the federal minimum wage in 2014 was 24% below its peak value in 1968. So I can't think of many people who would be willing to work at a wage level that was appropriate in 1968 today. And the latest proposal, we've seen that there was a proposal to raise the minimum wage to $10.10. The latest one now has gone up to $12, $12 by the year 2020. And so I think that as Congress continues to grapple with what is an appropriate minimum wage, the end result, I hope, will be that the minimum wage gets raised to whatever level they deem to be appropriate.
And real quickly, by the way, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures, they have a little table that Georgia's state minimum wage is $5.15, which is well below the federal minimum of $7.25. But there are all sorts of exceptions and applications that are probably too complicated to get into here.
Right.
But very quickly, how much of this conversation, because you mentioned how little the current minimum wage covers versus how much it would have covered a few years ago. How much of this whole conversation is just people talking past each other? People who are, let's say, employers or folks who might be fortunate enough to make more, not realizing how difficult it is to get by on the minimum wage. And at the same time, advocates perhaps not understanding what the impact might be on businesses if the wage were raised. In other words, people just not communicating very well.
I think it's the case that either side doesn't understand the point that the other is making. I think that the interests are not always aligned, and so you get this sort of battle over what's going to happen. But, the fact is, I believe it's the case that not only do those who are wealthier not have a sense of what it means to survive on the minimum wage, but there are a lot of misconceptions about who minimum wage workers are. The majority of minimum wage workers are not teenagers who work part-time jobs after school or in the summer. The average age of affected minimum wage workers who would be affected by the Raise the Wage Act is 36 years old. More than a quarter of them have children. The majority work full-time. And nearly half have at least some college experience. And they earn more than half of their family's total income, so they're primary breadwinners. So I think when you look at it through that lens and realize how broad of an impact that the minimum wage has, there's no denying that it's essential that we raise the minimum wage. And I think the back and forth about what to raise it to is the compromise that we make between what will be feasible for and practical for business owners and what's necessary for America's families.
Valerie Wilson is director of the Program on Race, Ethnicity, and the Economy at the Economic Policy Institute. We've been talking about the impact of the minimum wage and raising it, how it could affect women of color. Ms. Wilson, thank you so much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thanks so much.
And we want to hear from you. You know the number, 404-733-0934. Tell us what you think about that issue, 404-733-0934, and we may use your comment on air.